Are you ready?
Born ready.
Lick the stamp. Wrong one. Hello and welcome to the show. Today, I am with Mr. Liam Talbot. And you might notice if you're watching the video today rather than just listening that we're in a different location. We are hanging out, with Liam's helmet collection. Buddy, how are you? Thanks for making the time.
Good, thanks. Good to be back on. I had heaps of fun last time, so I thought we were all talked out. Must have a bit more to talk about, huh?
Mate, I reckon we could bang on for a while. I haven't got a watch on, so I don't know what time it is. But
I think we timed out last time.
Yeah, I think we timed out. We've been talking for a while, even here while we got set up. So many memories in the room, but also so many things going on in the right now.
True.
Part of the reason that I reached out to you to come back on and chat to me again is not just because I sit around enjoying, chewing the fat with you, but, mate, you're doing a little bit more motor racing, and to apply context, the first round of said racing has just finished.
Correct. I tried to retire, but that didn't really happen. The pandemic gave me a little pause, more like it. I obviously increased the family from one child to two children. My English is not impossible.
No, it is not impossible. And look, we are not smart men. We just sit here and try and do the things. So you went plus one child, so you now need two cars.
Yeah, I was kind of trying to be responsible. I was like, oh, I've got no time for motorsport, got to be a dad, which I love being a dad. But the motorsport journey kept continuing, and as much as I tried to resist it and tried to retire, it was just a pause.
And this is the problem, is if you have the car/motorsport virus, it's kind of like The Godfather.
Yes.
I thought I was out there pulling me back in. And you just can't. You can't help yourself. You try and stay away, and then you're like, oh, next minute, I fell into my race suit. Oh, look, there's a driving opportunity. Souls.
True. Very true.
Whoops.
Last year was amazing. Won the championship in GT World Challenge Australia. So
it was a pretty good one. Do you want to back up for a sec on that? So what were you driving? What did you win?
GT World Challenge Australia. There's a GT World Challenge Europe. We won in 2016 the endurance championship of that version. So that was, amazing. Endurance is the hardest championship to win. So many variables, and the longer the motor race goes on, the more that can go wrong. Driver, pit stop, anything.
Mechanical. So many things to break.
Correct. And so big deal in Australia winning the GT title, and been a long time coming. I've been first loser or first runner-up a couple of times, so a little frustrating. But again, those years, there was always circumstances there, and just subjective pit stop times for some people versus you, and who gets the advantage. It felt like everyone else, but that's all right. We keep on rolling. The harder the challenge, the harder we fight,
and the sweeter the victory.
But last season in the Audi R8.
We're full potato here this afternoon, aren't we? Mate, talking.
That's all right. So, the Audi R8, a V10 engine, and that thing was singing all year long. It was in the window, and it's just an absolute pleasure to go racing with your friends and get results.
And it pumped. That was the best part, isn't it? You know those cars quite well because you've spent a bit of time in the R8s over the years.
That's correct. I feel like the more time I spend in it, the more I become one with it. I was learning, and I really felt like I started off the year pretty poorly by catching COVID, not on purpose. And I sort of unlocked a bit of potential coming back. I was underprepared to go racing at the 12-hour. I just drove faster than I'd ever driven before. And it's almost like those performances where you see like the flu game for Michael Jordan or someone just stepping up and putting on a good performance. So I was definitely underprepared for the 12-hour and then just lifted to a new level and basically did a 2:03 around Bathurst in qualifying. So I was like, whoa.
It's proper moving. See, the Ben Othling taught me about a thing called deloading. I don't know what that means, but basically it's when you take time off and that's actually good for you. And I'm
apparently,
I just did 2 weeks of deloading over the school holidays, and I said to him, I said, I'm loving the shit out of this deloading. This is the best word for not doing anything.
This is the easiest workout,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Look, I must say you took it a bit further catching the spicy cough as well, but that worked for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like I needed to elevate to cover my lack of fitness, and I knew I could do one stint. I wasn't sure if I could do two or three, and turns out I could.
Gave it the berries.
Mm. The season last year started off with the 12-hour, went back for Easter for the first round of the GT World Challenge Australia Championship, pole position in my qualifying, won the first race, got the maximum handicap, so they give you 15 seconds extra over the entire field to sit stationary for your pit stop. Had a bit of overtaking to do. My pro driver, Max Hoffer, did a good job in his stint, but had to sit in the lane for longer than everyone else, and then we won the second race. So I was like, whoa, that shouldn't happen.
Bloody good, isn't it?
Take that penalty.
Yeah, suffering your jocks.
And it was basically some more wins, some more pole positions, and just having fun. So I felt like nobody wanted to drive with me. I was meant to have Chris Meese at the start of the year, but then he was a bit sick, so he couldn't make the first round. Had Max Hoffer. Then Fraser Ross, who was part of the program putting it together, he came back for a couple of rounds. Maybe got sick of me. And then I had Garth Tander. Maybe he got sick of me. Then I eventually had Chris Meese, who I was meant to start the year with. So no one really lasted that long with me. They only managed two rounds or one. But, had heaps of fun, and getting the championship was amazing. Such a great feeling. There was definitely a lot of emotion in the cabin once I got the confirmation over the radio.
That you've done it. That is special, because there are so many times you go racing and the result is just not great, because there are, as we said, so many variables.
Yeah, there's circumstances outside your control, and unfortunately you can be the fastest, you can have the potential to win the race, but unless you cross that finish line first, you don't have anything to show for
it. Mate, nothing to show for it, just the war wounds of...
It's cruel. Yeah. High highs and low lows.
Very
and
low lows.
Kind of nothing in between.
No, there's really not, is there?
It's either really good or not so good.
Yeah, sometimes maybe good.
Hey, we all make mistakes, and things happen outside of our control, and I think it's a humbling experience. The stopwatch doesn't lie, and we win together and we lose together as a team.
And that's the big one. I've got some young fellas that I'm showing them the ropes in the basics of a motorsport team. And one of the biggest lessons recently was everything was going wrong. You know, they were 24 hours out, supposed to be packed up and left, and they'd mentally just hit the wall. And I said to them, I said, you're going to have to learn that it gets a lot worse than this, and that if you fall over at this hurdle, you need to sell your car now, because this sport is not for you.
Oh, absolutely. You got to think on the fly all the time and expect the unexpected and just, you know, contingency plans, and there's so much that you can't anticipate. And, it changes quick. When you think you've got the stuff nailed, it's going to nail you.
And I think that the attitude, going into it with the attitude that you have, that gun racing with my mates, you approach it with a sense of joy, with a sense of fun, even though you take it very seriously, it's still with a smile on your face and a spring in your step. And I know that that's something you've always done, and I find it interesting, having watched you racing for so long, the fact that you still talk about it exactly the same way.
Well, I like to be underestimated, but then sometimes your reputation precedes you.
Gets harder to do that, mate, when you start getting a bit of silverware. They can underestimate you at the start, but
then I guess there's a pressure to perform. Not only the pressure you put on yourself, but then there's expectation of people in pit lane, and they're like expecting, oh, Talbot's going to do this, Talbot's going to do that. Talbot definitely wants to do this and that, but until it actually happens, it's potential.
That's pretty much the game, isn't it, mate?
I like that humbling experience. The stopwatch doesn't lie. It resets every lap, every race weekend, and there's a new challenge.
And you start again. And speaking of new challenges, This is what I was very excited to talk about. There's a new race program put together and you're driving little prancing horses around.
Correct. Yes, been headhunted to join Arise Racing GT with their brand new 296 Ferrari program. So two new Ferraris, new to Australia, new to the team, new to the championship here. And to be part of that is, you know, for me, very humbling. I've got experience with Ferrari overseas. Actually, we've had some experiences together in the Ferrari. So the 458 in Europe, and then I did a little bit of a cameo on the 488 in the Asian Le Mans series. So, yeah, I've had heaps of fun in red, as they say, and it's really nice to be back in a Ferrari.
They are beautiful cars, and I must say, when I was looking at the livery and just the sheer presence of those cars, there's something special about a Ferrari GT car.
There's a presence. It's hard to quantify, but definitely it's unlike any other manufacturer, and there's a distinct presence and the way they build things. And then you have the Italian engineers or mechanics or just the passion. There's something that you can't explain, but it's distinctly different.
Yeah, there's a fire to it, and I think it is the passion, and you can feel raw emotion in and around those cars. There are some cars that just have a precise nature to them, and it's not to say that the Ferraris are not precise. They are very precise, but then there is also just a fierce nature that comes with them too, and they're bloody good looking.
Oh yeah, I think special is a way to describe them. That it is very special, and this generation of Ferrari is being worked on by Orica, which have got prototype experience. So in endurance racing, if something goes wrong, you want that experience, and they've decided, well, we might get a tire puncture. That's no good. We lose time getting to the pits. Why do we go slow? Because we don't want to damage the bodywork. Okay, what if we go fast? Damage that bodywork. What can we change? So it's one clip, it's two half turns and two clips, and the entire rear bar, half the floor and diffuser and rear wing all come off in one clip.
Bloody hell.
A 35 second change.
Bloody hell.
And 25 seconds on the front. So, and especially, like, obviously when time's critical, that's very important. But then for the mechanic that's working on between sessions, sometimes the sessions are very tight. You want to get access to the engine. Maybe you need to make a change with a component and you've got to pull half the car apart to get access to it. We can get access underneath the engine and right to the front of the engine or the back, as it were. And you've got direct access. There's no reaching or overreaching and trying to hope and pray that you can touch that component you need to change, and you got direct access right there. And it's basically your car drives down the pit lane in 7 minutes. It's in the garage, double up jacks, and all the panels are taken off. So it's like the whole thing's just completely broken, but it's just a couple of turns with the tool, and it unlocks all the car.
That's unreal. I didn't realize that there was that level of development in their chassis.
That's the first time it's ever been done.
Wow.
And again, that's Orica.
And so they're preparing this chassis to campaign heavily in longer events as well. So,
well, just making everything easier. Like what can go wrong and how can we make it better? So that forethought is amazing, because the category's never seen anything like this. And then suddenly every manufacturer's like, oh, yeah, we should do that.
So. Well, this is the thing. And with mid-engine supercars, nothing traditionally is particularly easy to get to. It's everything up, everything out to get to anything, which is part of their charm. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's when you see it in person, it's like, wow.
Bloody hell.
Even half the exhaust is built into that rear bar. So when you pull it off, half the exhaust all comes at the same time.
Disconnects. You're like,
yep.
Wow.
And it's a very small little twin turbo V6 engine. So, yeah, super impressive.
How is it with the new spoolie boy Ferraris? What's it like driving the turbos versus the Atmo cars? Is it a big difference or is it?
It feels like it's naturally aspirated.
Does it really?
Even more so once we go into a wet mode. It dulls that turbo. Obviously, there's like a little, you can feel the power band, like any naturally aspirated car, but it's not as if you feel the massive boost winding up and then just
it's not 90s boost.
No, not Fast and the Furious. Yeah. And anything like that. But yeah, the power delivery is like super smooth. We've got so many controls. We can actually, I believe it's 600 combinations we can run on this steering wheel with submenus and options. And we've got three traction controls. We've got engine maps. If we're over boosting, we can change certain parameters. You lose a wheel sensor on one side, you can piggyback off the other. Same for the fuel. We're only scratching the surface with this car.
Wow. Okay, so there's a lot going on.
Even little things. So say you're sort of, there's one corner on the track, you don't know whether it's third or fourth, and you want to be in fourth, but then third gear's better for the punch out, but then the engine's holding you back with the engine braking. We can go through a menu and we can change the sensitivity of the engine braking.
Wow. Mate, that's ridiculous. And you can do all that on the fly as well.
Correct. Even little things like you set up, there's three traction control systems, so you set those up how you want your car, and then you might decide there's one corner, maybe it's a long straight, you don't want any traction control intervention because it's holding you back, so you want like full control. Or maybe it's the other way, you've got full control the whole time and you want a safety net at one corner. So we've got a TC fix, it's called. So we hit a button on our lovely, not very cheap steering wheel, press that button, and for a programmed 5 to 10 seconds, we can preset our three traction control settings to whatever we want.
This is mind-blowing.
So when you start scratching the surface, it's not just a car, like the setup.
That's a weapon.
Before you even get on track, then you get on track and you've got all these buttons and toys to play with, as well as the physical setup and geometry of the car.
And this is fairly familiar across most of the new generation of vehicles. I assume that they're all going this way with fairly hardcore setups, or have you not had a chance to play with them?
Well, the Audi went through a Evo update so that it got air conditioning, which is mega.
Mate,
it's almost, it gets too cold, so you've got to turn it down. Especially if it's a cold day and your windscreen's fogging up and you've got to run the aircon, you're just like, oh no. That's time for the co-driver to jump in.
AC in a race car in Australia should be just a compulsory. No cool suit rubbish, just AC on blasting.
And then, you know, it's got some TC things, so you can play with, you know, the traditional, like the road car, the drive, that type of traction, but then also the slide side to side. But then, yeah, this Ferrari takes it to another level. And I feel like every time there's a new generation of car by a manufacturer, they find some things that you're like, oh, that makes sense. We should have had that years ago.
Certainly sounds like they've dialed it up.
We're only scratching the surface with the Ferrari, but there's a lot going on. And I think the enthusiastic or the encouraging thing is if something goes wrong, we've got all these systems in place in the background that we can go through menus and basically recover the car.
Isn't that amazing? Except if you've got to like turn it off and turn it back on again, do you have to ever power cycle it? Does it ever need that, where you've actually got to power cycle the electronics? Or
unfortunately, with the electronics, that's always a possibility. But so far, we've been okay.
So far, so good. Because, I mean, that's not the call you want. Okay, have you tried turning it off and back on again?
That's magic, like, isn't it?
Oh, please don't.
It's a thing. It's a thing with electronics.
Mate, it is. It is. Part of the charm of newer cars. But, mate, this new program, because Arise is a new team, if I understand correctly, or a new entry to Australian GT?
Yeah, it's
or
a new entry. So they specialise in Radical. So they've been around for a while doing the Radical series, which they've been quite successful in that respect. And then, yeah, they've decided that they want to do GT racing, and not in an insignificant way. Basically, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right.
Going all in.
And, I mean, the danger signs are people always say in motorsport, you know, it's well-funded, it's going to be this, it's going to be. And you're like, that actually instills less confidence.
But when
I started digging around and started talking to some people that were connected to the program, and you're uncovering a bit more information, and it's like, okay. But then I guess in the back of your mind you're thinking, okay, new team, what's going to be the issue? We're going to have a teething problem. Something's going to happen, whether it's on our side, the drivers or the team or the car. But then meeting the team before we even went on track to shake the car down, I was like, we're on here, boys. we've got a good, really good team. So, yeah, really, really cool to be part of the team. And even more so, like, not turning up to a team that's got procedures in place and, you know, you're part of the system and you're making recommendations and just saying, oh, I don't think this works, or actually everyone's listening and everyone's driving in the same direction to make the team the best they can. So it's really exciting to grow with the team and be part of that initial phase where there's so much going on.
That is really exciting to be part of a program, and you certainly know when you walk into a team environment, and because you've done it more than once, you can tell if the vibe check and whether it's sort of feeling right. But they're probably familiar with your time in a radical as well. I'm sure they probably looked it up at some point that you know a few things about that. And having the opportunity, I guess, to help them bed in their GT campaign and being able to bring some of your experience in piloting those cars to help them roll out the program is unreal.
Crazy journey for me now, because I've always been, you know, I guess the young fella, but starting motorsport a bit later, coming in not having driven whatever car I'm in, not being on whatever track I'm on. So to turn around now and go, well, I've got this experience, I've got this feeling, and this is the direction we should go, or having this advice and leaning on that experience is a whole new world for me.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because you've got just up over your shoulder there is your Radical Australia gold helmet.
That's the one.
But that's the thing, mate. We can't hide the greys in our beard anymore, can we? I mean, you know, you've got you got a bit
bit of colour,
bit of sun in up in the hair there, mate. So you're hiding the greys there, but mate, the beard
doesn't lie,
points,
huh?
No, that points it out. You've got to get a bit of adjustment in there as well.
True.
I'm told that's a thing. I'm just aging disgracefully.
I don't have to look at myself.
Nah, it doesn't matter. But it's lovely reaching that point in your racing career where you are actually, I don't know, you've got so much experience that you can bring to it and to share with it and to help drive it.
Definitely, yeah. It's a whole new world for me. And last last year and this year, it's the experience is just coming on. Like, you're really tapping into it and utilizing it and knowing what you need when you need it, instead of just, I wouldn't say second guessing yourself, but the more you do it, the more you gather information and keep it in the back of your mind, and when the moment's right, you pull it out. So,
because you just know, isn't it? And I think that that's where the experience and the intuition start working together, is that you, because you've done it, you recognize the scenario and you go, hang on a second, I've played this game before.
Correct.
And do you find that you're just trusting the intuition, you're learning to go, It knows what it's talking about.
Definitely. I think early on I'd always blame myself as opposed to the car, where drivers are the other way around. They're like, oh, it must be the car. I was inexperienced, didn't know what I was doing. So I always knew that it was me, not the car. I still, to an extent, carry that. Like, I still believe that, you know, I'm not driving the car to the maximum. Even as I say that, I set the lap record in the last race for the track in the GT car, and I'm like, there's still more in it. So you never stop learning. It's a humbling sport, but yeah, being able to lean on that experience is really cool for me. And then even more so, my teammate, the fellow bronze driver, Elliot Schutz, first time in a GT car. It was his first round ever in a GT car, and to be able to lean on that experience, because I said, basically, we have a test day, we come back, we have 2 hours of unofficial practice, we have 2 hours of official practice. Look at all that experience you're getting. Plus, we had the shakedown in Perth with the car, a performance test day in Perth. So you've got this massive time and experience in the car. I said, I turned up, I shared the car for 2 half-hour sessions in an Audi R8, and then I went racing. So that was 6 months into my motorsport career. So having had that experience, I can lean on that and actually assist him. And for me personally, that was kind of what the year was going to be, was stepping back and probably offering a bit of assistance to another driver. And I've kind of got the best of both worlds. I get to actually mate, actively you
get to punt it around and be the wise one.
Yeah, well,
what are the odds?
Hopefully I'm wise, but I know exactly what he's going through. And
because
yeah.
How old's he? What's his story?
I think he's 35, 36.
Yeah, okay.
He's been doing a bit of sim racing and did Radical Cup last year and went pretty well. And, it's a whole new world, jumping in the GT car.
How did he find the car? How did he go on his first session?
He's been impressive. Like, straight out of the box, he's been good and keeping me honest. And I'm not insecure. I mean, I want to see the team do well and I want to see him do well. So if he does well, then we all go well, you know, like...
Isn't that a good attitude, mate? That's probably not an attitude we always see through pit lane, is it?
Yeah, but the team's important. Like, if you cause harmony, you're not going to last very long there.
I think that's lovely, mate, just being able to lift each other up.
Sometimes if you can't win and your teammate can win, like, that's a good day.
Yeah, give them a nudge and see if they can find their way. Yeah. So tell me about the series this year, because has it seen some changes because it's with the way that GT is rolling out in Australia now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, 2016 was a big year for GT. Bad quality was like 22 or 23, and that's a lot of GT cars. Suffered with politics and who owns a championship and rules and enforcing them and not enforcing them. It doesn't instill confidence. And, times are tough in Australia. We have less people interested, less companies willing to participate with their sponsorship, which is vital to our sport. And, it's just suffered. It's sort of been lingering and sort of life support. Then it's like half strong and then people get let down. But so SRO, they run obviously the championships around the world, Europe, America, Asia, Australia, and these cars are balanced on their performance. So you have multiple parameters that you can change. So ideally they should do a lap time within a tenth of a second of each other. And that's pretty cool, the fact that there's a six-cylinder Porsche, a 10-cylinder Lamborghini or Audi, twin-turbo V6 Ferrari, all these different makes and models. And they all do a lap time pretty similar. They obviously make their speed very differently, depending on their strengths and weaknesses. But, it creates exciting racing. And having those points of differences, it stands out on a racetrack instead of like 20 identical cars, which one-make series are mega. Like, to win a one-make championship, you have to be pretty good because driver and engineer need to be on it to get the advantage.
I think it's a lovely time in Australian motorsport for GT to have a big push as well, because people talk about glory days of Group B and crazy things and Godzilla on the mountain. And you look at GT and you go, you're actually being given that smorgasbord. This is it.
Definitely. I mean, motorsport and around the world is doing amazing things. You got the WEC, the World Endurance Championship, that includes the Le Mans 24 Hour, which is, you know, the oldest, that's the endurance race you want to be part of.
Mate,
so the elusive one for me personally. But you got all these manufacturers that are creating what's called a hypercar. So these prototypes that are hyper fast, effectively, and bit of hybrid technology in a race car and doing amazing things. And BMW, Lamborghini, Ferrari, Aston Martin are coming. There's all these brands and manufacturers, and you know, these professional drivers are ending up P22, P23 in their championships because there's that much competition, and then that filters down to the other classes.
Because I think we'll look back on these years as glory days of motorsport for our time, because we all owe a debt of gratitude to Netflix.
Absolutely.
And Drive to Survive. Because Formula One was something that just a few crazy people would watch.
Yeah.
Especially in Australia.
Dedicated people.
But as we've got to learn the personalities and the stories and the characters and to, again, peer behind the curtain and learn what goes into it, it has revolutionised motorsport around the world, and you see it in every form. And I believe that supercars are now filming their own bit. I've been delighted to watch your documentaries over the last 2 years as well, and being able to see the process that goes into it and how much attention it has brought to motorsport and to help globalize an audience as well. Things that were very region specific are now actually getting international coverage.
Well, motorsport's such a unique sport, you know. Like the footballers, they don't have people chatting to them before they go on the field, not in the locker room. Motorsport, you drive your car to the grid, you get out, and then people are having conversations with you that get direct access to you, or they get a tour of the garage and you've just got out of your car and had to do a debrief, chatting, seeing the car. Like it's pretty unique in that way. So there's stories to be told that people are unaware effectively. So it's cool to have like a Netflix opportunity to bring these stories to the surface, because people in motorsport, everyone talks and everyone's, you're somewhat aware of some of the stories, and they obviously, Chinese whispers get passed along the way and they might not be the full picture, but to bring the full picture to the surface is cool. And that's part of the documentary series. I have a friend of mine, Kid Suave, that's passionate about what he does in the media, and he wants to film me and tell my story. And, yeah, it's just a couple of mates just like you and me doing our thing and having fun along the way. And, yeah, if you can bring a story to the surface, it's cool, because you want to share the journey, like, really share the journey.
You do, mate, and it was lovely. We were chatting before we jumped on, and you were telling me, and I actually don't know his real name, but Kid Suave, who does your media work, I was commenting on how fantastic the stuff looked coming out of Phillip Island, and it just always, mate, it just always looks hot. Like,
well, I have to apologise for real life that I'm a letdown now.
Look, it's a bit rough, but, you know, if he could just buff you up and make you look... Yeah, slow motion. I think that's what we all need. We all need slow motion.
Slow motion's super effective, isn't it? You don't know what you're looking at, but you're like...
You're like...
Yeah, that's got it going on.
Yeah, that bloke looks so serious. Looks like he's meant to be there. But he's done a wonderful job with you, and he's been with you for a couple of years now.
That's
correct. So I said you're doing a wonderful job giving the opportunity to media people to
help make something of themselves. Journey along the way from the very first days. Like, yeah. Just... not even knowing where it's going at Morgan Park. Then we've been in at a little Bathurst 12-hour race, and then suddenly we've gone around the world and been at Spa, Barcelona, Nürburgring, like, mate, stuff we've done together. Like,
done it all. Crazy. And that's the funniest thing, is you play Gran Turismo or Nürburgring and, sorry, you work around all the different tracks all around the world, and you're like, oh, yeah, been there, and, like, that was all just you and me. Ripping around,
and we had no idea what we're doing, but we're like, oh yeah, I'll have a crack and I'll take it seriously.
And that's the best part, is I laugh, and even as we're here today chatting, and you know, you've welcomed me in to your home and doing a flying podcast here. I've never done a podcast out of studio before.
It's cool being on location, something,
mate,
different.
It's great being on location. I'm here looking at the bin chickens outside. It's the best. And being able to come to you and just go, oh, mate, look, this could be a schmozzle, but I reckon it might work, and we'll give it a bash. It's just nice to be able to do it with your mates and just go, yeah, we'll see what happens.
If it doesn't work.
Doesn't work, man. Try again.
All good.
It's still a good afternoon. However, I do have to look, Charlie said to just provide feedback on the coffee.
Yeah.
Very foamy.
Oh, really?
Very foamy. And foam versus moustache can be awkward. So,
yeah, it's not beard friendly.
No, I said, mate, blend 43, that's all I need, the fancy foam.
Well, it's better than me doing it. I probably just would have written coffee on the side and went, there you go, it says coffee.
Mate, that's okay. That's okay.
It's probably too. A dad joke.
So, yeah, well, that's the problem. Look, we think we're hilarious.
Oh, we are.
And honestly, that's the only thing that matters. And actually, speaking of dad jokes and hilarious, you've got to talk to me a little bit, because where I'm sitting here, I can actually see your lawn.
Yes.
I have been stoked to watch you get excited about your lawn.
It's life-changing, isn't it?
Mate, it's a good time, isn't it? There's something really wrong with us, but we've found that joy in life.
Yeah, but you can't help but notice good lawn.
You can't. Or
not so good lawn. When things change quickly and it sort of deteriorates, then you know. But yeah, I mean, it's not obsessive, but you got to take pride in what you do.
And you've got yourself a zero turn as well now, haven't you? You've been through the different things, and you've stepped into the big leagues of...
The zero turn is where it's at.
Oh.
But you need a backup, so I've got two.
You've got the little steery one as well? You got a little...
Well, I've got the catcher, and I've got a mulcher, and few little toys, but mate, in case catcher, one breaks down, yeah.
The catcher is the game changer.
As long as it's not wet.
As long as it's, look, you can't do it when it's wet. That's not a good time. But when you've just got the cutter and it leaves everything everywhere, not so good.
Oh, the growth, but you can't get on there because it rains and the weight of the mower and
correct.
First world problems.
Massive first world problems, but like the best middle-age problems. Because when you get the zero turn, the catcher,
ooh,
and then put the effort in, whew, yeah.
That's very sad.
Special. Because I did make note that I arrived today and I saw that somebody had driven across your lawn. And I can see you putting sand into the divots there, trying to bring them back. But it's brutal.
It's a tough one. I mean, obviously where the drain comes out, there's a bit of overflow and it goes right through where people want to drive because they don't want to walk up the driveway too far. So, yeah, what can you do, you know? Like if that's the worst thing that happens to me, I think I'll be okay. But
it's terrible. But this is the problem is when the other dads turn up, they go, "Poor, geez, mate, what's going on there?" We can't help but point out such things. Again, I shouldn't be throwing stones. I haven't mowed probably for weeks, so I've actually
got weather, the climate's been terrible. The amount of rain.
The rain has been.
The humidity has insanity. Been growing season, but then it just doesn't dry out and it's about time to mow again and then it bombs you again.
And then it rains again and I'm like, righto, I'll do it tomorrow. And then I'm like, crap.
But the trouble is all that growth, you cut it off and it's been in darkness for a couple of weeks, so then it looks terrible. It's effectively died. It hasn't died, but it looks all brown and nasty and you look like you don't know what you're doing.
And it's tough. It's tough. There are a few people around here that compete in the Lawn Olympics.
There's a
core players.
There's a house up the road there. Yeah,
they go hard.
It's probably the gold standard.
Ooh.
And that's just the footpath or the nature strip.
So big flex.
Yeah, I mean, they've got it going on. Lawn, they've got the catcher, so that stuff's not going anywhere except where it's meant to be, not on the lawn.
I am so excited about this. I'm actually going to have to drive out that way and have a look.
Well, turn left out of the driveway on the left, 5-acre block.
Yeah, go and suss it out.
It's nice. You won't miss it. It's for sale too if you...
Mate, I might have a look. Then we could have competing lawns. The Riabi edger, I'm not sure if you're across this, the spinning blade.
Yeah, I saw you put it up and I was like, yeah, that's where it's at.
Mate, those are the duck starts. I was explaining to somebody the other day and they're like, oh, no, I just turn my whippersnapper on its side. I'm like, nah, amateur. Because if you get whippersnapper, I know there's a finesse to it, but the blade is like surgically perfect and you can get the really pronounced chunk of lawn.
Oh, and it's... uniform everywhere.
It's so straight. It is very satisfying.
Yeah, and you got your little guard and the wheel and it's following it.
Yeah, and it just goes, mate, perfectly straight.
Oh, geez, do you find going into Bunnings and you're like, oh, I'm going to need that now, and then suddenly your armory.
Oh, totally, mate. I certainly work out the old Power Pass card. But then you've got to get onto, when you really want to take it to another level, get the pressure washer out and pressure wash the gutter. And I don't know if you've got full path out the front of your joint, but if you pressure wash the gutter and any concrete out the front, whew.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do that, but it's a bit hard because people drive down the road a little bit fast. But that is on the list, the wish list.
Because you just do it to the edges of your property as well, that you can do the hard line just to flex.
Yep.
On the other dads.
I'm hearing you.
Yeah. So
it's on the to-do list. There's
pro tips there, mate.
2.5 acres. There's never a dull day.
Because I have been also encouraging you to put Lawn Mowing Simulator onto your actual simulator because I really would like to see for those rainy days where you can't get the zero turnout.
Well, there's a bit of lawn envy, and if you can't mow, you got to take out that frustration. And why be frustrated when you can be on the sim, right?
Absolutely. And you could just get there and go, oh, look, I've just got to put some practice in. Just got to go and do a few laps of the backyard.
Next minute there's a laser scanner. Just don't end up in the creek.
And we digress. Mate, season 2024, where are we going racing?
Well, we've already completed round one at Phillip Island. So, what can I say?
What's next on the schedule? Have you got where does the calendar go this year?
Tail and Bend in about 5-6 weeks. So we have 2 1-hour races there. Effectively, they're all 2 1-hour races. We have a endurance race that's 3 hours that forms 2 rounds of an endurance championship. So Bathurst 12 hours one, and then we have a 3-hour race in Sydney. But it's a bit strange. They said in the press conference, they put a question to me. They said, you did the 12-hour in an Audi and then you're going to be racing the Ferrari. So I'm like, oh, that's a bit strange. Competing in a championship and you're like, oh, this day I'll be in one car and the next day you're in another. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, how does that work?
Yeah. Oh, points are points. But,
points are points, doesn't matter. Just
yeah, a bit interesting, I guess. A bit
awkward.
Yeah.
Okay, well, mainly Ferrari this year, so that's the predominant drive, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a very nice feeling. We have Queensland Raceway, so that's really cool. Tony Quinn's done amazing work,
mate. In how good you are, TQ, mate. We tip our hat to you.
Absolutely.
The work that man has done to make Queensland Raceway stunning, a place we can be proud of.
You want to go there for racing, but then you also want to enjoy the facilities, and there was no facility.
It was not a good place to take your sponsors.
Exactly. But rough. Now there's like actual garages for your car, so that's a big start. There's a roof, so you can actually stand up on the roof and get a good view of the track instead of not being able to see anything. There's obviously more safety features built into the track, more shade around the track, more facilities to sit and relax, and more importantly, if you're a family – and that's me, that's you. You bring your little people along with you. You need somewhere to go. So, and you need to be comfortable.
And that is right up the top of the importance level, particularly when you've got your little people, and I'm sure your kids do too. We've got the little kids' earmuffs that they wear to make sure that they don't get too many loud noises in their little ears. But, yeah, just having the shade and being able to get them a bite to eat and it not just being in the blazing sun going, why are we here?
Exactly. The next round we were meant to go to Darwin. Well, it was proposed. Obviously, there was a bit of lobbying with the government, I believe. I'm not sure the exact details, but, yeah, it's expensive. So to try and get some sponsorship and a bit of revenue for the teams to make the trip worthwhile would have been nice. Obviously, been up there a couple of times with Carrera Cup and supercars. So, yeah. In the middle of winter to go up to Darwin and just go, oh, summer's back for a couple of days is a very nice feeling, especially for those Victorian folk down south that experience the cold, bitter winters that they do.
Yeah, they'd be quite pleased to come north for.
Yes, exactly. So unfortunately that fell through, or that's not happening. So we go back to Phillip Island again. But then after the first round of Phillip Island, which we'll touch on, we'll be excited to go there again. We have Sydney Motorsport Park, an endurance round. And then I think our final round is Bathurst for a November Bathurst International meeting.
How bloody good is that?
And then not part of the championship, but I think a week later we're back at Bathurst for Challenge Bathurst, which is just basically testing your car. So you get a few sessions over 2 days and you just go out and test your car. There's no balance of performance, so you run what you want, or you can take all the BOP off and do a hero lap.
Just which let it rip.
Has happened before, and
that's special.
Especially the Ferrari's never been to Bathurst before, so we get the Bathurst round with the championship. We get the test and tune for a couple of days of the Challenge, and then we keep that information in our back pocket. We do a bit of thinking, we go pouring through the data, and then we get ready for the Bathurst 12-hour the next year, and we've got...
You're very well prepared there,
hitting
aren't you?
The ground running.
Mate, that's an excellent lineup.
Hmm.
That's a big year too. There's quite a bit of racing going through.
Definitely. So,
wow.
Yeah, just any race is special, but racing a Ferrari just makes that extra bit. So we touched on Phillip Island. We've had round one. And,
absolutely. Let's go through
there's
that.
There's a lot of unknowns, obviously. New car, new team, trying to get everything right. And, I mean, the team assembled is amazing at Arise Racing GT. A lot of hours. Like, the cars only turned up in, like, effectively from December. There was nothing there. So buildings were built for the factory back in WA.
Wow.
Cars turned up at the end of February, I think. And then, trying to get them on track for shakedowns and performance days. And, yeah, it's just been – everyone involved has been
absolutely big effort.
Like MVP performance, effectively.
That is a big effort because that is not a lot of time.
Crazy.
To put that whole package together with the cars arriving at that point and then going, righto, you've never seen this before, but exactly. Let it rip.
But – hitting the ground running, like that first shakedown day, I was like, wow, this thing out of the box was amazing. And then we had another shakedown day and it was like, we're learning more and we're like, this is amazing. Then we have our first performance day and it was like, holy moly, what have we got here? Like, we're still learning and everything's positive. Like, the team, the team's amazing. Like, you just walk in and you trust everyone. And that's what I said after we left from the Perth test. I just said, you know, us drivers, we're going to try everything. We're going to try our hardest. We're going to try our best and make you guys proud. But seeing what you do in the pits in the factory and working as hard as you do and the dedication and that passion, like, makes us want to try even harder. And yeah, it's true. Like, seeing that with the hours they're putting in, it's thankless. It's not seen. We see it. We can't unnotice what is going on because you know how long it takes to do X, Y, and Z. And yeah, it's amazing to see. And this team, like, it is a well-oiled machine. And we're still learning, but we learn quick. And I think it's definitely at the level of the best, if not the best supercars team, and perhaps even beyond their capabilities. So to be in a short amount of time to get in that realm is unbelievable, and that's a testament to all the people involved.
And that's pretty wild. And then to end your weekend on the top step, I mean, talk me through the weekend, because you were saying that you got in – what was this? This was Wednesday or thereabouts?
Yeah, we get in Wednesday now as opposed to Thursday. I mean, we're at the track Thursday anyway with track walks and driver's briefings, etc. But they've introduced a bit of extra paid practice or optional practice. And the idea behind that is they give us 2 hours, 2 one-hour sessions, and it's very expensive to go testing a week out, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is. So you're there anyway, so an extra 2 hours of track time is good for everyone to get your equipment in check, get work on setup if you've never been to that track like us. With the car, we're still learning it. And, yeah, I think it's a great initiative for the championship. Again, it's optional, so you don't have to do it, but, yeah.
Yeah, but it's there, and I think that that's wonderful to have that little bit of extra time up your sleeves rather than having to wait.
Mm.
It's like, we're here, we could go.
Exactly.
And so at least you can get out, give it a nudge, and just make sure that everything's behaving as expected. And if it's not, yeah, you can make your dash down the shops and, yeah.
Exactly. Well, you basically, when you go to from Thursday to Friday to first free practice, you hit the ground running.
You do.
You've got the runs on the board, you know the setup, you know the sweet spot, a little bit of tinkering, fine-tuning. Let's go this direction, let's see, let's compare data. And then for your last practice session, which is now called pre-qualifying like they do in Europe, it's just a fancy name for practice too. Effectively, if qualifying was cancelled, which it happens sometimes, you'd always go back to practice two, but because it's called pre-qualifying, it suddenly means something. So people in the back of their mind might think, oh, we have to do well in pre-qualifying. It's practice two. So always keep in mind the practice two results might count for something. But, yeah, so we've got official pre-qualifying now.
Fancy. Look at Australia, mate. We're getting there.
Yeah, with a little bit of Europe coming down, but, you know, it's the same story. Do well. Practice is practice. Roll in a quali, do the best job there because that's what sets the grid.
And how was quali? How did that roll out for you guys?
Yes, it's a lot of unknowns. I mean, the whole track's been resurfaced at Phillip Island. It's always been one of the best well-kept facilities in Australian motorsport.
Thank you, MotoGP.
Exactly. I mean, even the grounds. The groundskeeper just
is amazing.
It's magnificent. And you have this view of the ocean, which is spectacular. I mean, you're very far south and it's very cold for us Queenslanders. So we're a little bit more rugged up.
Well, that's it. They've got bloody penguins down there, mate. It's freezing.
Genuinely penguins. And those little things are so cute.
They
when
are
you go
so cute.
And go to the penguin parade. So, yeah, there was a lot of unknowns because they've resurfaced the entire surface of the track.
Yeah, so the whole lot has all been done. It's amazing.
But not just like a like for like. It, naturally, when you resurface the track, it's going to be faster. It's going to be more grip. But I don't know what they've done or what they've poured in this surface because it was every car was lit
Really?
Effectively.
It's got berries. They've got the secret sauce.
Well, remember, you've got this muscle memory in your body and your mind, and you know over the years when you're on a green tire and you're hustling and you're in qual and you're pushing the limit, and then you roll out on a used tire. Like I had a moment in testing and torched a set of tires at turn one and it ended up in the gravel. So we're like, we've only got the tires from Perth that are 300Ks old. And I mean, that tires from Perth are pretty shagged. Like they're absolutely destroyed because of the surface there and the sand. It eats away the asphalt. So it's like driving on rocks. And we're like, oh, well, it is what it is. And then I'm looking at the time on the dash and I'm like, what? And even the engineer, like, he's like double checking that those tires are what they say they were, because he's like, that time shouldn't be that time. So you on the used tire, you're like faster than your own quali over the years, and you're like,
what?
How can this be? And it's mind altering to redefine, and then you go to a new set of tires and you're even faster again, like, and just pushing the limits of the car, and you're like, I think we're tapped out on what the car can do. So you've got to change the technique of how to drive it and what the car actually likes. We're still learning that. And, it's just crazy. So with all that in the background, we don't know what the number is. What are we aiming for? Over the years, you kind of have a ballpark figure. And
now the whole thing's just, you know, they've literally just wiped the board and you've got to start again.
Correct.
And what was the moment that you had? So you've gone and...
Oh, the car was very nervous through turn one, which is a high-speed right-hand corner, and I sort of building up and tried to use sixth gear, and it just, whether it was the wind, the car was, maybe the setup wasn't right, and it's basically disconnected from the surface and in the high speed, like a new circuit that's high grip. Once it disconnects, you can't regain the control. So, you never stop learning.
Mm. So I played Frisbee.
Did my experience said that after that. Don't do that again.
No, that would have been a clenching the bottom moment.
Yeah, so, I mean, you always think you're going to save it, but not on this day.
No, and in particular on the aero cars, when the aero gets unloaded, you're just like, see you later.
Correct. So, I mean, on the test day, I did a quali sim, and I was like, wow, the time's good, but then I'm like, looking at the data and I'm like, nah, that wasn't good there. That wasn't good at that corner. I could maximize it. And the trouble is with all that grip, you're trying to carry the mid-corner speed, but the car just wouldn't accept it. So there was more just in the drive. So you focus on the exits and get the drive, and it was rewarding the lap time. So it was good on the test day to not do what was wrong, but try something and go, well, that's not the direction we need to go. So then we can fine tune up both car and driver and work out how to go faster.
And did you find, just chatting around the paddock as you wandered through pit lane, that people had a similar experience? So different teams were all just going, oh, God, what the hell? Was there a fair bit of that?
Everyone's saying, because they did some testing pre-Bathurst 12-hour, which obviously we didn't have the car, so they're just telling me about how fast you can go through turn one, so maybe that's why I spun out. I was trying to do what they said. But, everyone was experiencing new things and everyone couldn't believe the grip level. Obviously, you're seeing the time on the dash and you're like, that must be a good time, but how do you know? And especially with no timing until we get into official practice on the Friday, there was a lot of unknowns. So, we rolled into qualifying with the pro starting first. So teaming up with Chaz Mostert for the year was a super cool privilege, and Adam DeBore Engineering, which is really cool. I mean, those guys have been a great team over the years and been doing wonderful things, and to be able to step into their environment and be part of it. And probably more importantly for me is to learn, but then push myself to a new level. Obviously, they have their expectations of what they want to do, and to be exposed to that environment and be inspired to push harder is a really cool opportunity. So, quali, Chaz was in first, and just watching him do his thing. And, I mean, the quali was pretty tight at the end. It was, I think it was 28th or, I don't know, 27s were the quali time back in 1 year ago, effectively, when we were at the track. And then he set a 25-1, which was a qualifying record and pole position, which
bloody
is
bloody hell
amazing to see. Then I went out after him, and yeah, there was a few red flags and I got one flyer and I did a 25.8. So, I mean, less fuel than him, so that helps. But 7/10 off Chaz Mostert, my own teammate in the same car. So good benchmark and, yeah, I was like, wow.
It's moving.
So
And you blokes have done a couple of things together over the years, haven't you? Yeah,
we've done a couple of Bathurst 12 hours together. We did the Phillip Island event 2 years ago. And, yeah, it's just been a few one-offs. So to have a whole championship sharing the car with himself and work towards getting the best out of the car and the team is a really amazing opportunity.
It's a bloody good thing, isn't it, mate?
So, yeah, I mean, the year started off well. We're both fastest qualifiers with the SRO having full control of the championship. They're bringing the rules from Europe, which is not unknown to me, but obviously procedures in the car are a bit new. And yeah, we had a red flag and came through with the full course yellow, which is 80 k's an hour under red flag, which I did when the pit lane hit the limiter, but just a procedural error and didn't do the right thing with the gear selection and got done for pit lane speeding.
You're speeding, Mr. Talbot. Terrible.
Not on purpose.
Terrible.
I was hoping I didn't get caught.
Out of the 600 settings? No, yeah. They got a laser somewhere on there.
Yeah, I mean, accidents happen. That was my fault.
So, and that was just correct speed but wrong gear.
Yes, correct. Oh, I mean, yeah, it didn't latch effectively, so gotcha. Didn't have the limiter.
Quite enough.
So I got, unfortunately, a five-place grid drop, so I went from pole position, which I got the award, but, they reclassified me in fifth place.
Brutal.
That made for an interesting race. Instead of the high-speed nature of Phillip Island is amazing, but when you're a car behind another car, you get this little thing called aero wash. So there's a dirty air coming out that's disturbed by the car in front, and instead of turning with this amount of lock, you've got to wind on more lock on the steering wheel, which washes you wide, creates understeer, basically heats up your front tyres, and you can't follow as close. And, it's very hard to overtake because you want to get the run onto the straight, but you can't because of the high-speed corner before it. So, it would have been nice to be on pole position. We had a fast race car and just clear out, but the grid drop actually was a bit of a blessing in disguise because we've never run in dirty air and never run behind another car. I learnt a fair bit about the car and definitely we needed a change for race two.
So, really? And see, this is the jet wash. That's all I can think of is the top end type.
Yeah, exactly the same principle.
Yeah, and having to tuck in. Do you know what's funny? I'd never really thought about it. I'd never thought about how much that would affect the aero cars.
But when you're asking the absolute limit of the car and you're up to the limit and sometimes over the limit, it doesn't take much. But, no. I mean, if the car in front, if it misses the apex by a half a metre or a metre and if you get in there and just like almost on the grass or maybe if it's not too bumpy, maybe you have two wheels on the grass and you think about if you're turning left, those inside wheels are just being carried. They're not really creating much in the way of stability. It's all the outside tyres.
Just floating.
Floating, that's probably the best way to imagine it. And, so you can almost – I'm not recommending to drive on the grass, but especially at the nice Phillip Island circuit.
Yeah, don't touch that.
But if you can get right to the apex and a little bit more and the car in front misses it, you can get a little bit of clean air, which helps.
That would make a huge difference. Well, that's interesting. So that placement, despite the frustration of it, gave you that opportunity to discover how the car would then behave.
Correct. We just needed to tune up the buggy. There was a bit too much understeer, especially in that jet wash.
In the jet wash, okay. So you had to dial the understeer to get that right.
But then when you're in clean air, obviously it's going to be a pointier car, or more precision is required.
More precise. But that's all right. I'm sure you can handle that. As a man who knows how to, work a zero turn, I'm sure you can find that precision.
Well, you never stop learning, do you?
No, you don't. So how did that then go? So you've done your first – where did you end up?
We started fifth. I handed the car over in third. And then somehow we jumped our sister car and another car on the pit stop, and we came out leading the race. Chaz doing a great job, and then unfortunately there was a big crash which caused red flag. There was damage done to the barrier, so we weren't going to finish the race. So I got called, and we won the first race of the championship. So Chaz and I won the first race of the championship a couple of years ago. So that's 3 years in a row I've won the opening race of the championship. And our even better was our sister car came second. So for a team on debut, we were 1-2 on the podium.
I did notice that you were clogging a fair bit of the podium there with the Arise Racing team.
Yeah, we definitely were loud and proud in red.
Mate, a lot of red up on that top step.
Well, it's so. Ferrari. You've got to be red. You've got to be passionate.
Mate, and the good people at Ferrari, I'm sure, would have enjoyed all that as well.
So for a debut, like, wow.
That's pretty great. Because is this the first time so that Ferrari's not campaigning in Australia under any other circumstances. So you guys are breaking new ground.
Correct.
With that platform.
Correct. Unbelievable.
It's bloody good times, mate. How'd that happen?
Oh, I mean, a lot of work, a lot of hours, and a lot of smart people being involved and making the right call at the right time.
Isn't that wild?
And, yeah, I mean, you dream of your debut, and especially for the team, because it's not just one car, one driver. There's four drivers, two cars, one team. And what's the best on paper? A 1-2. Trying to get in that reality with other cars, gunning for those positions is very hard. The first race of the season, there's no success handicap, but from then on, every race result, your next race, you can or cannot be handicapped. So if you win the race, every car has to do a pit stop. They have to stay stationary for a mandatory amount of time. And then there's another parameter for pit in and pit out. That time is taken into consideration as well. So then teams work out how long they stay stationary for, depending on where they are in the pit lane. So there's a bit of work, a bit of a calculation, but then they throw in this success handicap scenario. So if you win the race, you sit longer in pit lane by 15 seconds than everyone else.
Spicy.
10 seconds for second place, 5 for third.
Wow.
Fourth place, 0 success handicap, and so on. So effectively, you get the maximum handicap for winning the race.
Wow.
Maximum points, but yeah, it makes it very hard to come back from the success handicap, especially when the championship is competitive, which we have this year. We have a lot of good cars, good teams, and drivers.
It's bloody wild. I didn't realise that you also had to carry a success handicap into the next. That's full on, but it certainly makes the racing very exciting because you've really got to push now, don't you? You've got to double down.
Exactly. And then, yeah, you have that high, and then potentially they can not reward you for doing well. They absolutely actually punish
totally
you.
Totally pants you for, yeah, like, see you later.
And then you get to the end of the year and the championship's spruiking how tight and how close the championship is, but it's effectively being artificially inflated when you give your opposition a free kick or a bit of a leg up because they didn't do so well and then you get penalised. You're like, I mean, the law of averages. The cream rises to the top. Eventually it'll all sort itself out. But what if you have a mechanical issue? What if you have an error? What if something happens? What if there's contact? What if there's a extra pit stop and you got a poor finish of ninth or something like that? So, yeah, it's a little frustrating, but the idea is don't think about the penalty. Drive as fast as you can. The rest will sort itself out.
Exactly.
And if you can't win, just try and get safely as many positions as you can. And if you're a fourth or fifth place car on the day and that's the maximum you can do, you've got to accept it. But then you go, okay, tomorrow or the next race, no handicap for me.
And I must say, fourth with no penalty does sound like a strategic move. I'm sure there's a play there somewhere.
Yeah, I think if you read into things and you get your spreadsheet out, you can kind of navigate the success handicaps to maximise your return on investment on the track. But I don't know. I don't want to think too much. I just want to drive fast.
A lot of work. Just send it.
And you get the most points for a race win. And it's the most satisfying. Biggest trophies. Everyone's happier.
All the champagne, the top step.
Yeah, actually, I tried to run away because I've only got one race suit.
Oh, no.
Normally we do a round podium, but now we're doing race-by-race podiums. And then my lovely mate Will Brown decided to chase me down. I think I was a target because I was the only one that ran off like a little...
That'll do it, mate.
Like you, a little girl.
You really do make yourself a target by... You just got to cop it. Or even better, just... be the instigator, be the troublemaker.
And then bail.
Or what you can do then is direct the attention at somebody else and away from yourself.
I was out of there. In my mind, I was like, Sunday, cool, game on, but Saturday, not today.
And, okay, come on. Because, mate, race suit's sticky. It's not like you can just throw it in the washing machine.
Yeah, thanks, Will Brown. And then he decided to wash his race suit.
Oh.
And it didn't dry so good in the cold Phillip Island conditions. So
they don't. That happens.
Yeah, young race car drivers, huh?
It's all right. He'll figure it out. Not a veteran yet.
Hey, but it was a little damp towards the end of my first half of the race. Handed over to Chaz. It got a little bit more damp, so they couldn't go faster than our times. I mean,
really?
They're obviously pros. We're the non-professionals or semi-professionals, depending on how you want to be called. And, so that meant with a new surface, and I did the fastest lap of the race to that point, I had the lap record.
Get out.
On the first day, and I was like, hey, that's good. And then I'm thinking the next day, like, Chaz will start the race. I'm like, I'm sure he's going to beat my lap record, or one of these other pros will. I wonder in the second half of the race if I can get my lap record back. Not that I'm competitive or anything.
No, not at all.
I mean, the motor race is a motor race, but the race within the race, I'm like, I was like, well, that's pretty cool, but once you have it, you don't want to give it up.
No.
But then now we're going back to Phillip Island for another round this year, and I'm like, oh, geez, what are those conditions? Maybe it could be rainy and no one beats my lap record.
This is good. Have you checked Wikipedia yet? Has that been updated?
No.
We'll have to go and have a look and see if you're got that there in the GT category.
Well, I have the timing to prove it.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm saying.
When they put the asterisk next to your name, you've got the fastest lap.
Correct. We'll have to jump on and make sure that Wikipedia accurately reflects.
Well, when you get your first lap record, you know, things are going pretty good.
That's pretty special. And for Phillip Island as well.
Oh, the high speed commitment.
Mate, solid.
So,
yeah, that's a pretty good weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you never stop learning. Motorsport's very humbling, and unfortunately, as a team, I'll put my hand up. I made a mistake on the cold tyres on the race two. Mm. We had the most handicap. We had a bit of a we didn't get it right with the leaving the box under the pit stop finishing, and there was another car, so there was a bit of miscommunication there. I had some warnings with the clutch overheating, so we'd never done the launch with the cold tyres, and then just there's some procedural stuff in the car that we're learning, and when you sort of prop and stop but you're still rolling, there's another procedure to do, but we're very wary of doing that and going with the manual clutch because we don't want to burn out this very expensive clutch. So, yeah, just did another launch. You've got to put 20 bar of pressure to activate this mode, and, yeah, unfortunately it just all went a bit pear-shaped, and then I got stuck at the pit exit, and then it got going, and then just got distracted with the cold tyres and had a little spin on the outlap as well. And, yeah, just thought the race was over. I was reading online. I came out with 53 seconds in arrears after my little moment, which is totally on me, and apologised to the team. But then I never give up and got back to within 16 seconds of the lead, and was basically right on the tail. So I had a moment on the last lap to lunge for third place, but didn't get there. Another lap could have got there. But, in the process, reset my lap record that the pros tried to steal on the first half of the race, but then low fuel and, the car was set to jet, and I was perhaps a little bit more fired up. A little bit more determined.
I'll bet there was a dash of frustration there that certainly came out.
But then the cool thing is, so Paul Stokel, he owned the Radical that I first started in motorsport with, and he's obviously a very, very experienced race car driver. So when he'd tell me something, I'd be like, okay, I'll do that because you're the one with the experience, not me. And so he's been racing in a sister car on the Audi for a couple of years, and he'd been just in a different half of the race than myself, so we hadn't had a chance to the teacher and the student go head to head, and we're in different qualifying sessions. But then this year he's in the same qualifying session, the same half of the race that I'll do. So yeah, it's been pretty cool. Been a whole different different experience being on the racetrack with someone that was fundamental in your learning in those early days and getting the right things in place. So he even brought in his engineer back in those first few races back in 2013, Rick Kemp. And then lo and behold, Rick Kemp came out of retirement and he was there on the Thursday. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And then chatting to Paul and he's like, I didn't know Rick was here. And I was like, yeah, he was here.
Isn't that wild?
So, yeah, it's been a really cool experience with your teacher basically racing on track. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not talking him down. He's definitely someone with experience and I look forward to the challenge. That,
oh, mate, he's a weapon. That's the thing. He has put the miles in, that fella.
Definitely.
And that's amazing. Isn't that fun though? But there's some real Mr. Miyagi stuff going on here.
For sure.
I just think that that's fantastic that then you can have a little dust up out on track with the bloke that taught you all the tricks.
And, yeah. I haven't had a chance to lunge him. He was driving. He was pretty determined in front of me. And I was like, if I didn't get that pit lane speeding and grid drop, I would have been in front and he wouldn't have caught me. But yeah, we were working our way through the traffic together.
Good
Got
fun.
A Mercedes and we're, yeah, just chugging along.
Bloody good fun, mate. And that's a lovely story. And Rick was a wonderful engineer, wonderful part of the team.
Yeah, it was so good. I haven't seen him for years, but he's like, I'm keeping an eye.
Of course he is. That's what happens, mate. They don't disappear. You don't leave. You don't get out. Once you never leave the family. You can't help yourself, can you?
So that's cool. That was very cool to see.
What a good time.
Stokel was a bit jealous that he didn't see Rick.
Oh, well, he would have been. He would have been like, come on, mate.
I guess I'm the favourite.
Must be. Hey, there's no need to rub it in, all right? Nobody likes a smart ass.
Just timing. He was right in front of my pit box, so it was a bit easier to see him.
And does that take us to the end of the weekend, or have we?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, race win came back to fourth. So, yeah, I mean, if that's a bad day, fourth, we'll take that.
No, mate, fourth's great. That's very strategic. You got to tell strategic. People that was very strategic.
Yeah, sandbagging.
Yeah.
But if you call that a bad weekend, then we are equal first in the championship in our first round. So, yeah, with the mistake, with the error and the poor finish, that's our bad day, to be equal first in the championship for the first round, I'm like, you know what, that's pretty good. Maybe it's a good thing we didn't win that second race with the big handicap.
Mate, that's pretty wild actually. And it doesn't carry forward like your fourth place. Does that affect going into the next round or?
Yeah, that's how it's calibrated. So first place, see you later. You're not going to be a contender because you're going to be handicapped.
So you are telling me these are your fourth strategy. Place, mate. These are your 4D chess.
Full sandbagging. Moves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, oh no, I came fourth. Suckers.
Checkmate in five moves.
Oh, this could totally work. I'm starting to understand now.
Well, yeah. In theory, in theory. Practice, yeah, we never
wait
aiming.
And see.
Well, it's always maximum.
And then there's the jet wash and all the other things. And
yeah, exactly. So, wild. Yeah. Equal first in the championship after the first round, a 1-2 on debut, amazing. 2 days, two lap records. Yeah, wow.
Absolute mayhem. That's
what a
so
debut.
Good.
And, I mean, we still haven't had all our toys turn up, so there's a few more things that we can play around with the car because we don't know what it likes, so we need to take a swing at the setup in both directions and just say,
and just see.
Does it like it? What's the information? Because we might not need it for this round or the next round, and we go to another track and we go, oh, remember we made that change and that feeling? Maybe we need to do that.
Well, I think that's it. You're going from one of the best surfaces you're going to run on all year, and then the information you're taking away from that will be different to a surface that's seen a bit more love.
Yeah, well, that's Perth. Perth is, I wouldn't say degraded, but it just wears. It wears very aggressively with the sand blowing on the circuit, so it's like being sandblasted. And you have all this aggregate that fills in the rocks, but that gets eaten away by the sand. So then, It's like little white pointers you're driving on.
Absolutely. And then having that sticking to the tyres, and I could only imagine, I'm not smart enough to figure out how bad that would be, but my guess is it would add complexity.
Yes, definitely. But that's a challenge in motorsport. You never rest on your laurels and you're always pushing forward and trying to improve. And, yeah, it's, like I said, humbling.
It's bloody good, mate. But it's nice just to see you out behind the wheel and having fun and just making the most of it.
Well, it's super exciting. I mean, big thanks to Arise Racing GT for having me. And then Lawrence Escalante that, you know, he's so passionate about motorsport and, you know, he's been the big driving force behind the scenes of getting this program up and running. He's invested and believes in the program and he's given all of us a chance. And this race team's come to life. It's this living organism and you see it in action and it's super impressive. And we're all dressed in red, so it's... you can't help but notice us.
Mate, you can't. The old prancing horse will do that.
Everyone in motorsport dresses in black. Everyone's got black shorts on, black jackets and
for
stuff.
For the grease, mate. And so we can wipe our hands on it.
And then, yeah, there's us on the grid all in red, in the pit lane all in red.
It's the Italian way.
Oh, it's so good. It's special.
It is the style. And, mate, for people, because, again, I'm not going to... As much as we could gas bag, I've got to try and get Lawn Mowing Simulator on your sim. Mate, for people that want to follow the adventures, follow your racing season, follow the GT, how can they keep an eye on all the things that yourself and Mr. Kid Suave are putting on the internet?
Ooh. Well, the internet, social media is a magical place. Liam Talbot Racing, Facebook, Insta, that's me. GT World Challenge Australia, they've got the Instagram, they've got the YouTube. They're very good with the socials of keeping people up to date behind the scenes. We're running a documentary, so we're going to try and do something different this year with a couple of episodes throughout the year as opposed to an end of year sort of all in.
Very good. So we're going to be able to catch up with your
maybe one every two races.
Don't have to wait till December.
Exactly.
Nice work, gents.
Maybe more parties at home.
Look out.
I mean, listening parties.
Listening, yeah.
Is that what you do for a documentary?
Don't know.
They do it for albums, from what I hear.
Yeah, screening.
Screening, yeah. Yeah,
we've got to do a screening.
See, we're legit.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
And then the best thing is the championship this year is on free-to-air TV. So it's on 7 Plus, 7 Mate. It's on the app, so it's live, but then it's also on demand. So basically no practice show on quali and both races.
How good. Because, I mean, this is what the people have been asking for. Free-to-air, motorsport, yep. There it is, GT, bringing it to
no
you.
No paywalls. Mate. That's just it's devastating. You know,
it does make it hard.
No one can see it. You do something amazing and nobody sees it, whereas let the people see. If people love motorsport, let's let them watch.
And I must say, because I sort of suffered behind the TCR's move when Stan gave him a big pile of money and then put it so it was you had to have Stan, but then you also had to have Stan Sport. So you've got multiple barriers to entry for a category that is attempting to grow. And I know that they got a big pile of money, but I look at the damage that did because people couldn't access it.
But the money went somewhere else. It didn't go to the motorsport teams.
It becomes irreparable and it really does hold it back. Whereas,
but I think the live and on-demand that came out of that was very important. So now with Channel 7, and I mean they've got great commentators involved.
Getting behind it.
The camera angles, like the people involved behind the scenes are so passionate. And
they know motorsport.
What they produce. And, it's amazing. And I think the most important thing is in this day and age is being on demand. We have family pressures or time constraints, work constraints. We can't be there live. So to be able to click it on demand, what a revolution.
Mate, it's unreal because I must say, because I had to go in and KO and Foxtel and all the things to be able to follow Formula One and the different things that I like to watch.
Yep.
But I'll be sitting at swimming on a Saturday morning with my boy and I'll just quietly have motor racing there on the phone. Because this is the problem is this is how we have to consume the thing. And you don't get to watch the whole race, but you might be able to just catch 10 minutes of it there at that time.
Even in KO Mini.
Ah, it's unreal.
So good.
It is unreal. Liam, this has been sensational. Look, as long as we remembered to push record, and if you're hearing this, it means we got it all right. The red light's still on that one. The red light's on that one. Hopefully I'm in frame. I don't even know.
It's been fun.
Mate, it has been bloody good.
I think it's fun. Good going on location, going somewhere different.
I think
different.
It is too. I like this. It's and yeah, by the way, mate, your hedges are a bit sloppy out there. So you'll have to get to work on that before we do our next episode.
Well, yeah, get the ladder out. Get on the roof.
Yeah, I might have to come back, keep following your motorsport season. So keep an eye on the lawn for you.
Nice.
Because it's exciting. I'm really keen to see where the season goes. And
me too.
And how it all unfolds because it's a pretty good start, as long as you know, watch your pit lane speeds and
never stop learning. Do
you? Don't go blazing those tyres off. Or
no, I mean, the humbling thing is that you never stop learning, and we are determined to push the envelope and improve and learn from our mistakes. Because if you don't learn, then it's not a mistake, right? If you keep doing it, it's a mistake.
That's it, mate. The lesson will present until the lesson is learned.
Exactly. That's a good way. I haven't heard that one.
It is us becoming wise in our advancing age.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I'm going to wind us up. Otherwise, we're going to get distracted again. Mr. Thanks, Liam Scotty. Talbot, buddy, thank you. I'm going to play the music and get us out of here.
You.
Thanks for coming on, and for those of you listening, thanks for joining us on the All Red Everything podcast. I'll catch you next time.